Hello, freaks, and happy 2025. This episode, like episode 123.5, comes with a bit of a disclaimer. Rather chillingly, this was recorded just a few hours before the house fire of November 21st that claimed the lives of four of our cats, Cora, Perfect, Cubby, and Pan, and took most of our belongings with it and changed our lives forever. Hunter and I had a lot of fun recording this episode. You'll probably hear that. But this was a very difficult one for me to edit, as listening to it reminds me that the room I recorded this in and most other episodes of Radical Research is now a cold and black war zone of charred walls and water and soot damage and fallen ceilings and a horrific tangle of insulation and my entire book collection and my entire CD collection, all which was in that room. It was suggested by someone shortly after the fire who meant well, certainly, and knew we talked about Bathory's worst album, that what I experienced that night was the curse of Octagon. And while that's probably funny for most people, one, I don't believe in curses, and two, it's just never going to be funny for me. And Octagon only feels worse to me now, but that's okay, because it's an album we can never love, no matter the circumstances. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your support of me and my surviving family members amidst this ordeal.
Hello, freaks, and welcome to Radical Research, episode 124. Weird one tonight. What have we gotten ourselves into, Hunter? I'm here with half man, half biscuit, Hunter Ginn. How you doing?
You know, for a half man, half biscuit, not too bad.
I've introduced you as the guy from Agaloc, the guy from Canvas Solaris before, but you're now the guy from Gorging Shade. The debut record is doing well and probably going to sell out by the time some people hear this, I suppose.
Yep. I'm very, very proud to have been a part of it. Gail wrote a really fantastic piece of music. And Chris and Nate, not surprisingly, come through with some incredible performances. So, yeah,
people,
really stoked about it.
You should be. People, and I'm a fan, and I don't. You know, I have friends that are in bands and I don't always absolutely love 100% what they do, but, you know, I'm also honest about it. You know, I don't blow smoke up anybody's ass, but I'm a fan of Gorging Shade, and it, you know, the album hit me pretty quickly and, I love it. And as a Canvas fan, cause if
people, would you say that you were gorging on it?
Yeah, you know, it's not the only, the record in the room, if you know what I mean. But no, I have been listening to it a lot lately, and thank you for that awesome pun. But I'm a Canvas Solaris fan, and this is Canvas Solaris in another guise, but I don't think it's not, I don't know how you guys aren't really marketing it that way, simply because it is such a different entity, mm-hmm. You know, the ability is there, the high ability, the high creativity, is there, but it's such a different sort of thing. I mean, people just have to hear it to understand what I'm saying. But I really like the first side, but I've told you this in the last couple of days, and I also told you in a group text with Gail as well. The second side is where it's at. The second side to me is true invention and true Gorging Shade, in the sense of like, oh, we are now, this is our sound. Like it doesn't, like I can hear more influences on the first side. By the time the second side rolls around and does what it does, at the end of it, I'm like, oh, that's Gorging Shade. That's like there's like you guys carve out yourself right there on WAP.
Let me agree more.
Yeah, and I know when I told you that, you said, yeah, I agree. So I'm really glad. I hope that the second record leans in that direction. Well, we'll see, you know.
Thing's gonna be a Plague Psalm Gorging Shade split.
Mm.
And it's gonna have Jason Walton and Tanner Anderson involved too.
Oh, nice. Okay. Wow.
And so we'll see. It's going to be interesting, but yeah, I agree. Like that second side, and I, you know, the like Gail did like, so the the thing that leads off the second side, the soundscape thing,
Yep.
that's all Gale. And I just love it to death. I think it's absolutely essential to the record.
I completely
I think
agree.
if
Yep.
anything, anything about it that's just token, I really think it adds to the whole journey.
Couldn't agree. Gorging Shade Inversions. Google it, seek it out. Maybe sold out already, but I would think that the interest, because you've had a lot of interest right away, I think hopefully beyond what you've expected. I just feel like 100 copies of that vinyl is not going to be enough. You guys need to press more. And is that a disclosed amount, or should I not say that? Should I edit that?
No, that's fine. Yeah,
Okay. Yeah, 100 copies were
I think
printed.
it's going to be sold out pretty quickly.
100 copies were printed. So I think you guys will maybe want to think about doing another 100, and hopefully it gets
I
on stream.
mean, I'm involved. I mean,
Yeah,
hard
I mean,
to say.
yeah, I mean, come on, hey man, I
Fuck
mean,
you gonna fuck 100 copies? Who the fuck I am?
Canvas Hilaires.
Canvas Hilaires, where the fuck we parking?
Yeah, where the fuck we parking? I'm Canvas
Yeah,
Hilaires.
fuck we parking.
I don't know if we've told that story on this episode, but I suppose that's only for hardcore radical research fans. If we have, that's.
Let's not. Let's just get into Bathory.
Let's get into Bathory. Well, no, we can't, because you know what? As ever, we really want to start this episode for real by acknowledging all of our listeners. We love hearing feedback from you. We get it often, and thanks for your patience if we are a little tardy in a response. Especially gigantic thanks to our Patreon supporters. We add new Patreon members, Timothy Llewellyn, Big Richard Lizardman, and Dan Franks to the growing ranks. Franks and Ranks. That kind of rhymes. That's nice. Thank you guys. If you want to help support what we do the way they are, this encourages us to keep going, to keep doing this week after week after week. Please go to patreon.com/radicalresearchpodcast and give any size donation you wish. It's an easy set it and forget it kind of way to show us you like what we're doing. Please also go to radicalresearch.org and pick up Deserts of Hex Volume 2, Hunter's, for lack of a better word, experimental sound journal. My books on Peter Steele and Fate's Warning are still there. Please rate us and review us wherever you listen to Radical Research. You have no idea how much we appreciate that, and you have no idea how much it helps. It allows people to find us, whether we're popping up in their feed more or whatever it is. Please give us a review and rate us wherever you listen to us if you haven't already. Find us again at patreon.com/radicalresearchpodcast. And now to the task at hand. Boy, Hunter, like I said at the top, what have we gotten ourselves into?
I don't know, man. I feel like you got us into this.
Oh, I see
Put
how I see.
this shit on you.
You
Yeah.
blame it on me.
Do it. No, I'm here.
I would do the same if I were you. I would
First
blame
of
it on.
all, all right. So let's start here. Why would you call it Octagon?
Well, four, five, six. It's the eighth Bathory record. That
Is
makes
it?
it. Yeah, that makes a ton of sense.
Oh, well, never mind.
All the integrity we have amassed in 124 episodes is now just flown out the window. Oh my
Leave
God.
that in there.
I am absolutely leaving that in there.
Yeah, no, I was thinking about it earlier. I was like, that's a stupid fucking title.
Oh, you kill me, brother. You kill me. I absolutely love it. Okay, so we got that out of the way. The eighth Bathory record is under microscope. Why is the question? Why the fuck would we cover this one? Well, somehow, I guess when we started to get people wanting to donate to us, I mean, this actually does dovetail into donations to this podcast, is we just kind of joked around like, oh, yeah, okay. And if you give $10,000, we'll cover Bathory's Octagon, because why the fuck would we want to cover that? We love Bathory. We will be talking about that a lot throughout this episode, how much we simply adore, revere, worship Bathory and Quorthon. And they're one and the same, let's face it. Both of us, big time. But this album is the pits. This album is, to me, along with Saint Anger, those are the two worst albums ever made by a once absolutely phenomenal, fucking amazing band. Now that's subjective, but those are my two. We'll talk about that more too. But this is how it evolved. We were just kind of joking. We keep joking about getting $10,000 for this. And I believe Benjamin Adler is the only person who by name sent us some money for it. And I think it was like a cent or 10 cents. It wasn't much. So, you know, we kind of realized right there and then, yeah, this ain't gonna happen. Of course, we were just joking anyway. We never thought we'd get 10K. So at some point, I called an audible not long ago, I guess. Two episodes ago or something, I just told Hunter, fuck it. Let's just talk about Octagon. Let's not have a plan. Let's just talk about Octagon and why it is such, it's not even a polarizing album. There are a couple people out there in the world that like it. Probably a couple people on the out there in the world that love it, but it's not even polarizing. It's just kind of considered absolute garbage. It's less polarizing than Cold Lake in that sense, because I think Cold Lake has more fans.
Well, Lake is way better than this.
It absolutely is. And we are not endorsing
And
one.
more sincere, too.
Yeah. Although, you know what? I think Saint Anger is less sincere than Octagon. If I'm going at the very bottom of the barrel and putting those two in some kind of order, in some sort of map.
I don't even know what Saint Anger is, dude.
What do you mean?
Like I don't know, I don't understand any of the motivation behind it. Like it, and seeing the documentary just makes that all the more apparent. It's
Okay.
like, okay, look, we're like four guys that don't really understand each other, but we have to eat. And so, like, hey man, I've got a riff, and then I can play drums to that.
But wasn't what okay, but if I had never seen some kind of monster documentary, which I have, I wish I hadn't in some ways, because if I hadn't seen that, I think I would think of Saint Anger differently, which is this. It was their response, not only to the things you're saying, because of that knowledge of the documentary, but just from hearing it and knowing their trajectory up until that point. I think Saint Anger is them understanding that they've hit a wall with the rock direction. I mean, it's basically the follow-up to Reload, right? Which was the second part of Load. We'll save our comments on those albums for another time. But you can see how precarious that is and where they were at commercially. It's like, what do we do? Well, people want us to go back to the really fast, thrashy stuff. Let's fucking do it. But they did not have an ounce of that in them. They were not there yet. You can argue that they were kind of back there with Death Magnetic. You can argue that they were back there with some of the later records after that. But like, they had nothing in the tank.
Well, I think they had heard a lot of nu metal
They'd heard a
at
lot
the
and
time,
thought it
too.
right and thought. You know, this was the stuff that we, you know, inspired the big, and it was big at the time. Because what was it? What are we talking about? 2003?
2003.
Yeah,
But I mean, they
2003.
were recording it in like 2002 or, yeah.
Well, okay, fair enough. But like, but still, nu metal is the biggest metal, for what it's worth, at that time. And they, and that's the path they took was like, let's follow in the path of our. The people that we inspired, or they thought that they inspired, or this—I don't know. It just they followed something that they should have never followed, because they simply didn't have that have it in them. And then we get tick 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 tock, and like I'm trying to think of some of the bad lyrics. I haven't listened to that album in a long time. I got rid of it a while back too.
Shouldn't.
Yeah, but you know, of course, the infamous snare sound. I mean, and Octagon has that as well. Before we get into Octagon, though, in light of all of this. Let's talk about where we were at in our Bathory fandom when this was released. I'd like to hear your story first.
So I got into Bathory way late, 1995, and it was through Alicia Morgan and her evangelism in Metal Maniacs. And so it was her review of Quorthon's solo record, which she completely disparaged and thought, how could the person that released Bathory and Bloodfire Death do this? And so I ended up getting Bloodfire Death right after that.
Okay, so that's your first. Wow,
Yep.
good first album to get, man.
Yeah, and it blew my mind.
I bet it did. Okay, so let's go here. We have no plan for this episode, as we mentioned. We just want to talk about Octagon. Let's see if it was worth $10,000, which I think listeners are finding out it certainly wasn't. But I feel like your entry into it, you're getting there in the peak. In my opinion, Blood Fire Death is the greatest Bathory album of all time. And there are other fucking great ones. Those first six are all amazing. It's just a matter of
I
degrees as
would
far
say, for me, Under the Sign of the Black Mark's my favorite.
as easy second for me. Dude, that
Yeah,
thing is
yeah.
unbelievable.
That's
Absolutely unbelievable.
probably my favorite. Yeah.
Right. Okay. How did you respond to the Viking records that came later? And I don't like to pigeonhole them too much, but we'll just call them the Viking records.
It was the vocals that took some time.
I can see that.
Love the music. And not so much for Hammerheart. But Twilight took some time.
Okay, now let me jump in there because I think I can at least elaborate. Because Hammerheart, when I first heard it, and I had been following this band since 86, early 86, I think The Return was the newest album. I'd heard them on Speed Kills 2, a 1986 compilation with the song Possessed from The Return. It completely blew my mind because I think until that point, the heaviest thing I had known, early 86, probably Possessed, the band. Ironic that the Bathory song I first heard was called Possessed, but it's a bridge. But I remember hearing that for the first time and just being, I was aghast. I was like, I'd heard nothing quite like it yet. You know what I mean? Like I'd heard Dark Angel, I'd heard Possessed. I was a fan of these bands, but Bathory did something else. So when I first heard Hammerheart, and I was, already, I'm a fan. I've been following them. It seemed like such a huge shift, and it still does musically, but vocally, even though he's not screeching at all like he used to, and he's one of the best screechers, if not the best of all time. It does have a roughness to it that in hindsight, I hear it as rougher than I did when it came out. When it came
I think
out.
that's what I'm trying to get across is like with Hammerheart, there's still that roughness.
Yes.
And on Twilight, he tried to like sing.
And at times, like in Under the Runes, he does a fantastic job.
Yeah.
And then there are times where I'm like, I think this guy might be losing his voice because of the screeching. I really do.
Yeah.
I think there's
Yeah.
evidence there. So let's move on then. Okay. We're at the sixth album. We're that those first six albums, those glorious first six. I'm sure everybody listening can at least understand what we're talking about if they're not huge fans. But like most everybody listening, I imagine understands what we're talking about when we say the first six Bathory albums. The legend. Okay, so he goes away for a little while. It seemed like a longer time than it was in hindsight. But then he comes back as Bathory with Requiem. This was after the solo album, the first solo album, I believe, which was called Album by Quorthon. He comes back with Requiem, and I remember getting this thing and it being a huge letdown. Like, I don't care if there are a bunch of skulls on the cover. I don't care if it looks fucking more metal. I don't care if he's playing fast and screaming again. It was just a kind of unattractive clutter and mess. What's your take on Requiem?
Super disappointing,
Right.
but not nearly as disappointing as Octagon.
Then we get into Octagon.
Yeah,
I cannot even say its name
and
normally.
it's like like you make a good point too, like the all the signifiers on the cover. It's like because the solo record was kind of weird and embarrassing too. It's like, okay, I'm gonna come back put a bunch of skulls on it and like do all the things that you think that I would do, but
Exactly.
it's not that good.
And sometimes that'll work for a band, but usually what it feels like to me is going, oh man, I'm a really good looking dude in high school. For my next class picture, I'm gonna put on the clothes I wore in kindergarten. You know what I mean? Like it doesn't, like it's not you. Like it didn't feel genuine. It felt like a too obvious move, and it didn't work. Do you know what I mean? Like if he had put out something like Under the Sign of Black Mark again, I think we all would have welcomed it. And it didn't have to be exactly like that, because this was a band that we were all wanting, I think, to evolve and change. But the problem with Requiem is it puts it it slammed the brakes on the evolution and the mutation, and it simply was like, now what? Well, now what are we gonna do? You know, like, and it just doesn't feel right. And then we get Octagon, which feels even less right. And in comparison's sake, Requiem's a way better album than Octagon.
Yes, sadly, it is.
The emptiness of Requiem, because it had this hollow, monotonous sound with the wrecked vocals, not good wrecked, but like spent kind of wrecked. All that stuff is magnified on Octagon.
To me, a lot of Octagon sounds like somebody that is worshiping way too much Pantera.
Ooh. There's a song at the end, and I had to review this album today. I think you did yesterday, if I'm not mistaken. We've both listened to this before. I used to own it. I think I became a better Bathory fan when I got rid of it about 7 or 8 years ago. I remember thinking, you know, I want this in my library because it's I just how much I worship this band. But why do I need Octagon in my collection? Why do I need this? And it made me feel almost, I remember taking it physically out of my CD rack and going, this feels better. Like, I feel like a better Bathory fan. The quotient of my great Bathory records on my CD rack just went up. It's the same thing as Virtual 11 by Iron Maiden, an album I despise, by a band I absolutely love. And I don't need that. Like, I remember getting rid of it a long time ago and thinking, yeah, that was the right move. That was the right move. What I wanted to say though was this album later in the sequence called Schizianity. Nice title. One thing that characterizes that, the phrasing is just so bad. And then you get this generic groovy slacker metal riff, and you mentioned Pantera, but that's not Quorthon, that's not Bathory, and it's weird that there would be anything Pantera-ish on this album, but there is, and you make a really good point. And what was this? What when did this album come out? This was
95.
95. Where are we at in Pantera world? They're kind of huge at this point.
So
Far Beyond Driven, I guess.
Far Beyond Driven came out in 94. It debuted at number one on the Billboard, which is
Look,
insane.
that was the only Pantera album I really liked when it came out. I've since it didn't take long to wear off on me, but I love that an album of that intensity and quality. I'll say it. Quality. I don't love it anymore, but that album has a certain quality. I'm so glad something like that went number one,
And
man.
it is
Come on.
so intense.
You
And it's
have to give it props.
incredible that it was number one. Octagon hangs in the sway between Far Beyond Driven and The Great Southern Trendkill.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Well, but I'm not countering that. I think you're right, but I think the riffs.
But I really do think that in a lot of way, like Pantera was sort of like the sorcerer of all metal movement, like in the mainstream during this time.
I think that's a real wow, dude. You just really summed that up really well. Their role in mid-90s metal, you really did. The difference between that era of Pantera, whether you like it or not, which I generally don't, but I have some respect, is the riffs. And if we get back to Octagon and even Requiem, but let's talk about Octagon, the riffs are so uninspired and so insipid. And I don't think you can say that about Pantera, even though I don't love Diamond Darrell's or Dimebag, I remember them from the Metal Magic days. I'll call him Diamond Darrell if I fucking want to. But his riffing, I don't love all the time, but I can't say it's uninspired and insipid. And I think that Octagon's riffs are pretty much all that. So there's another strike against Octagon. They sound Bathory. They s sound like some kind of a, like some Eastern European thrash death black band with a name like Gutterworm or some shit. Because it sucks, and but because it's Bathory, we can't forget it as easily as we could
And
Gutterworm.
it's insane to me that we're even talking about Bathory like against Pantera.
Well, and then that, okay. And I'll take you here now.
Okay.
It's hard to have this conversation. I've wondered if this was the right thing to do
Jeff, are we
because
breaking up?
are we breaking up? We're not breaking up. Listen here.
This is a hard conversation to have,
Well,
actually.
it is only because for me, and this is what I think you were talking about this earlier offline before we started recording. It's I've been kind of having some anxiety about this conversation all day because we have never in 124 episodes taken a band we absolutely put on the very top tier. Like if I were to make a top 10 favorite bands list, I think I'd have a hard time leaving Bathory off. I'm not sure where they'd fall, but it'd be real damn close to 10, within the 10, if not the
Same.
top 15. Yeah, same for you. Okay. So we've never done that with a band of that stature, a Genesis or a King Crimson or a Black Sabbath or any of these Voivod. We've never taken them to task for a shitty album. Like it's just not what we do. It's like doing an episode on Negatron by Voivod and going, yeah, it's not the best. Although it doesn't even compare to Octagon as far as how bad it
It's
is. It's
different.
not even close. But I'm just saying we haven't ever done that with a band we love. And it feels a little weird because it's really not our agenda. And I don't want to slag Quarthon. I don't want to slag Bathory as a whole. But we kind of cornered ourselves into this episode. And I thought it would be fun. And I'm still having fun talking to you about it. But I did have some anxiety today about doing this very thing. Do you know the song "Crawl to Your Cross"? It's on the Jubilee, one of the Jubileum CDs by Bathory. It's sort of yeah. It's from that Nether Zone area from like 88 or something, 87, where he was going to make this album that partly became Blood on Ice later and then kind of wasn't what he wanted.
There's a
And
lot of things about all that era and the things that came out later that I don't exactly trust.
well, okay, then that's another thing to talk about a little bit is how Quorthon, along with Kiss, were probably the two greatest bands who completely whitewashed and overwaxed their history, like to the like they would tell lies. Like I still to this day don't believe God let him rest in peace, Quorthon, Ace Shute, Thomas Forsberg, whatever name we want to give him, let him rest in peace. But I still don't believe to this day he'd never heard Venom when he formed
mean,
Bathory.
come on, man.
And then later on he would say,
Come
"Oh,
on.
I heard a couple songs. I never owned an album." Like,
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, that's I can believe he never owned an album, but maybe he wasn't a very
Well,
physical person.
I know. I know.
So there's a song called "Crawl to Your Cross," and we're gonna listen to it right now. That has an element of, I'm not gonna say disingenuousness. It's really good. I love it. But I can see why he sort of scrapped it. I don't think it was 100% at the time. I don't think he was quite there. And I think he, you know, when he did Blood Fire Death, that was exactly what he wanted to do. So he was always very, very in control of his band's destiny, of Bathory's direction. And the saddest thing about Octagon is how pointless it all seems.
Yeah, I mean it. I don't know if I would say it's pointless. It seems more desperate than pointless to me. A
Yeah.
guy that is trying to stay relevant.
I guess the reason I call it pointless is because, you know, this is a follow-up to Requiem, which was already, I think, a desperate album, as we kind of
Yeah.
agreed, but it's much worse. So therefore, to me, it has less purpose. I mean, or it just has less reason to exist. I think we were texting earlier about earlier today, before, way before we started recording. You hate this album. Like you're just flat out, I hate this album. And even though I hate it, I think I have more sympathy for it. It's like a child that I wish was aborted because that sounds really harsh, but it just should have been shelved. And that's why I kind of consider it pointless. It doesn't.
This record for me, and it came out like around the time of like r roughly Sepultura roots,
Oh, another disappointment. Huge.
just sticks in my gut.
Yeah. I mean, well, look, we're in 95, aren't we? 96, 95.
Yeah.
This is a tough going era for a lot of bands. Slayer, we're not putting out their best stuff.
Yeah.
You know, even Metallica with I guess Load was about to come out. We could really go down a long list here.
A rough time, man. I mean, it wasn't. It was like an amazing time
Thank you, because here's what I've always
like
responded
for
with when
all the other like the underground stuff that you and I were getting into.
you need but look to Europe and the independent labels and bands
It's
that were
all
putting out
you
stuff.
like had to do. And like for me, this is like really one of the best times in metal history.
It's
But for the bigger bands,
but look, I mean, the bigger bands were shedding skins and they would most of them would stay big, but the thing was, look at what happened in Europe with Opeth. Opeth were underground at the time, but they were the happening thing in 94, 95. Catatonia, same thing. Dissection, same thing.
in
We
the
could
woods,
keep
in the woods,
in the woods, at the gates,
at the gates.
Third
Yep.
War. We could keep going because that's all sentenced. That's always my response to people, Amorphous. That's always my response to people who say, "Oh, metal was so dead in the mid 90s." Like, yeah, you don't know metal because while some aspect of it, as you said, Hunter, the big bands were not dead, but struggling to find footing in this new world, you know, because things change, right? Times change, music changes,
Sure.
people's sensibilities change. There was stuff in Europe that was just so dead on and focused and creative and new and awesome that remains that way. Like we listen to those old Opeth albums, they're still so fucking amazing.
Dude, and I'll say this, and you can blush if you want to, but you had a huge goddamn part of that. Like, you took over Metal Maniacs at a time when it was dead. And you like reshaped it and gave light to all these other bands.
Well, thank you. That was the idea. I didn't know if I'd be successful or even have enough sway, but as soon as I got there, Mike Greenblatt, God bless him, gave me a lot of freedom. I think he understood I had a good eye and a good ear, and he just was like, "Go for it, dude. You know, I need you." And well, that kind of dives into what I was going to say too, was like this time in metal was not all dismal, not just because of these heavier, more extreme type bands, but this was the revival of heavy metal. We had Hammerfall, we had Nocturnal Rites, you know, Helloween were going to soon be coming out with some great albums again, and it kept going, and that was stuff I put in Maniacs that I don't think had gotten a lot of coverage in the first great era with Catherine Ludwig. She just wasn't into traditional metal as much as I was, so I really pushed for that stuff, and so I have no effect on how big that stuff got or whatever. I may have turned some people on to some of it. But what I'm saying is, like, that's where the wave was going. And so I'm always wanting to just crush people who say, again, we can get off this point after this, metal was dead in the mid 90s. Yeah, bullshit. Fuck off. You know what I mean? Like, no, it never really was.
No, metal's never dead.
It really hasn't. It, you know, it goes through waves, it goes through shedding of skins. But let's get into Octagon a little bit. I think the worst of the worst is just all of it, but there's some remarkably bad things that I just want to point out before we end this thing. Sociopath, another train wreck of a verse, just like Schizianity. Let's check that out. Hunter, in your survey of this album, the latest one, how many listens was that for you that you've had under your belt of Octagon?
Dude.
Sorry, what?
Oh, you mean like overall?
Yes, overall.
I don't know, like eight.
Oh wow. Okay, you're not. I'm not far ahead of you.
Yeah,
Yeah,
no.
yeah. So
I
you've,
think it's gross.
but you tried it. You tried it. You tried it six times before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I worship Porthon. And I felt like I owed that to him.
Same.
But God, he let me down with this one.
Do you recall in your recent visits or your first visits that 1 minute and 15 second song called Gray?
No.
Okay. Well, first of all, there's something wrong with Bathory having a song called Gray. I don't know why that just rubs me wrong. It's the one word, one syllable mid-90s thing, right?
It's so mid-90s.
Down.
Isn't there a song on Paradise Lost Host called Gray? Like that excuses it.
This out. I need
It's
to
a
know.
fucking great song, by the way.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I
Pray for that day
Yep.
when you'll leave behind. Yeah, oh God, that's maybe my favorite song on that album.
Same.
Paradise Lost host has to be a Radical Research episode, right? I mean, we've talked about it so much. But yeah, Behind the Gray was what it was called. The
Behind the
Bathory's Gray, however, sucks. I want to read you the
By contrast.
by contrast, I want to read you the chorus, the lyrics. Authority, society, parents, teachers, employees, and God.
Fuck all of them.
Orthon, please.
Yeah.
I mean, the verse
We're on.
lyrics, yeah, the verse lyrics are perhaps even worse. This is from the very first verse. Quote, they say we're free to speak whatever we may have to say, and that we're free to wear it all in every fucking way. It's up to fucking you to fulfill your damn fucking life with ease and to carry any symbol, view, or dream that you may fucking please.
I feel really badly for Corthon during this time of his life.
It kind of sends us to junior high, whereas on Under the
Dude.
Sign of the Black Mark, we are on the cliffs in complete demonic possession. It's so different, man. It's just
Dude.
so, why are we
Sad.
here?
Super sad.
Speaking of listing things in a chorus, just I guess to do it and to look punk, here's a listing from Century's chorus, the song called Century. Quote, conservatism, communism, paganism, national socialism, liberalism, Satanism, Christianity, slavery, anarchy, lunacy, insanity, mediocrity, assorted century. Assorted century?
I mean, that's, yeah, that's my thing.
What, being into
Assorted century.
assorted centuries?
Yeah,
You like
that's,
these?
yeah, that's, yeah, that's my thing.
I don't get the assorted century. I get everything else, but like again, why? Like, what's this listing of beliefs and things and dogmas?
It's sad, man.
Does it remind you of something that a teenage punk band would put into their chorus?
Well, why Corthon? It's like the guy is clearly a genius. Like he literally came up with a genre.
Oh yeah, no. I mean, there's no doubt
And
he's a
so
genius.
in how in 10 years did this happen?
Yeah. See, that's the thing. That's the other thing that I had anxiety about is I don't have any answers. I don't. Maybe Chris Black does. My good friend and our wonderful ally, Chris Maycock, aka Chris Black, who I think it's well known. He's writing a book on Bathory. He's been writing it for a long time. I've been privy to some of it, and I'm really feel privileged to have seen some of it and read some of it. When it comes out, and I know there was a Bathory book released about a year or two ago that I haven't looked at, but I understand is not authoritative. This will be the last and final and all knowing word of
I'm looking
Bathory.
forward to that.
It's going to be amazing. It'll come out when it comes out because I know very well that when you work on a book, you put it out when it's ready. You don't rush it. And he's not rushing this process. But what I can say about it is maybe he knows, maybe he has a clue. Maybe he can glean why this exists. Maybe we don't need an answer to why. Maybe it's just something that happened and we can never answer it. But I think he might, of all people in this world, maybe have a good answer for that. I should ask him. But I think he'll want to save that for the book. Anything else you want to say? Because I have a few more things to say about this album.
No, you say.
Well, I'm going to keep going. I don't know what your bedtime is, but here goes
You know
Wagner.
that bedtime's early.
Here goes Wagner on his screen. War Supply. It sounds in title and in Sonics like a Requiem outtake. The thing is, do we need a Requiem outtake?
No.
The vocals are worse than ever. It's almost by this point in the album as if he recorded the vocals in real time in the same running order that as we hear, and he's just running out of gas. So while he tries really hard on parts of War Supply, there's some parts of it where it's so wretched and out of steam that you're just shaking your head like, eh, I can't believe that didn't land on the cutting room floor. That kind of dovetails into that thing we were talking about there where he lost his voice, right? I mean, this is not, he did kind of lose his voice, right?
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't
And do you
think,
think it's because he didn't have technique?
right.
Because it blew it out? Like,
But what made it good back in the day on the first album, the second album, the third album, the fourth album, was that he didn't have technique. It was simply something that came from something somewhere deeper and somewhere way more primal. It's why it works. It wouldn't work otherwise, right? Here by this time, I just his, you know, his attempt at heavy vocals, just it can't meet the demands of the speed of this stuff. We haven't talked much about the music, really, or the production. Like we've talked about the snare being Saint
God,
Anger, Saint
dude.
Anger-ish. What are your thoughts on it?
Oh, horrible. Yeah, I mean the music itself is so generic, but the production is it's like an afterthought.
Right. Unmixed, unmastered.
Yeah, like everything about it is just sad. Chopped up drums, the guitars are all the like a really scooped mix. The mix itself is indifferent, all of it.
Oh, wow. Indifference, a good word for mix. Wow. Yeah. You're making me appreciate Octagon in a new way, but I don't love it any more than I already don't. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does.
No, but some of the descriptions, yeah, like it is an indifferent mix completely. I don't have much to add to that. It's very hollow, but Requiem was kind of hollow too.
Hollow. That's, I think that's what I was trying to say.
But I think when you get that kind of egregious snare sound, which is that's all you can say about the snare, is it's egregious sounding, like Saint Anger, like When the Storm Comes Down by Flotsam and Jetsam, one of the worst snare sounds of all time. Like it just right. It just yeah, you can't help but sound hollow with that sort of snare sound. But it's not just the snare in this case. But what do you think of things like Destroyer of Worlds, and then the Nordland 1 and 2, which were the next three and then final three Bathory albums before he passed.
don't mind the Nordland records.
They're okay.
Yeah, they're all right. I don't care for Destroyer Worlds.
No, that's not much better than Requiem.
Yeah, no, but I don't mind the Northern records.
What about Blood on Ice, which I'll tell you straight up, I love.
Love it. I
Okay.
just said I loved it.
Yeah, you did.
I
You
said I
did.
loved it before you said you loved it.
You just said you loved it, man. You said it before me.
I did. I
Yeah, you
loved
love it. That means you love it more than I do.
I do
But
love it.
that's an interesting one too, where you're like the mythology of or that Corthon's trying to build, I'm
Like,
not sure.
where, like, when was this recorded? And
I don't believe it, most of it, and I'm gonna say most of it, like 90% of it. I don't believe that most of it was from the 87, 88 era that I think he was claiming.
I don't either.
I know he had that title. I think that was even in print at one point. You know how Celtic Frost used to like forecast their album titles like three ahead. We never got Linebacker 3, for instance, but he used to do that. And Blood on Ice was, I think, a title that he put forth publicly back then. But I don't think, and I could be wrong, Maycock will tell me, but I think that also he mythologized it a lot for the real Blood on Ice, which came out, when did that come out? 90, 96, 1 year after Octagon, and was purported to be sort of a mesh of like things from 87, 88 sessions and these new sessions, and this is what that album was supposed to be back then, and he decided to turn tail and do Blood, Fire, Death. Well, again, I'm just saying, Hunter, that I don't believe that most of that record is from that era. I think almost all of it's new.
Yeah, same.
How does it work so well? Because I'll answer my own question and see what you think of this. I feel like this is the true follow-up to Twilight of the Gods. You agree with that?
So do I. Yep.
Oh, okay. Have you had that thought before?
Oh, yeah, but for years.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know if I've ever framed it that way. But I think I am now just through our conversations. And then we get another hiccup with Destroyer of Worlds, and then we get the Nordland albums, which were could have been one album. I think they're genuine enough, and that's why they kind of work. I don't listen to them often, but I also don't get rid of them. The final original song on Octagon, Judgment of Posterity, the longest song at 5 minutes, 12 seconds. So I guess the epic. More pointless clatter. I just don't think it does anything for its duration. It doesn't justify itself. And then we get tacked on to the end of the album, a cover of Kiss's Deuce, which originally appeared on Kiss's self-titled debut album in 1974, early 74. Bathory was an avowed Kiss fan, and as he should have been, because early Kiss up till even Lick It Up is great stuff, and I know you are pretty much with me on that. Why Deuce? Why the fuck Deuce?
I don't know. I mean, it's on, it's on Kiss Alive. I think the live version is the most vital version.
Dude, well, let's have a little segue to Kiss here. You and I both know, as many Kiss fans know, that the alive versions of all of those songs are better than all the ones on the studio records. And yes, that's not a completely, utterly, 100% purist live album. So fucking what? It's just better Kiss. It's malevolent. It's feral. It's grinding. It's sweat-soaked Kiss. It's metal.
Fuck yes. Oh, it is. It's some of the dirtiest rock and roll ever.
Yeah, no, I love it. I never get tired of that album. It's a double. It just rules. And like, so yeah, I can see why Corthon was into Kiss, but it doesn't help this album that he just tacks on
No.
a real insipid, awful version of Deuce, one of Kiss's best. And so God, the album couldn't have gotten worse, but then it did.
Let's make it worse.
Yeah. it's even worse than like Death Angels Frolic Through the Park. That's probably Radical Research fodder and an album that I mostly love, and I think you mostly love that album.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. But the version of Cold Gin near the end of that album also really doesn't make any sense. Like, why the fuck is why, you know, this is just slapped on here. It doesn't fit, you know. And we did a whole episode on covers that work. Let's not even denigrate Bathory any further. I think it's time to end. But if you want more Bathory, and if you pick up Octagon and love it, we'd love to hear from you. But you can get more Octagon. There are two outtakes, I think at least two, on Jubileum Volume 3. One song called Genocide and the other one called The Resolution Greed. And guess what? They both suck.
Plot twist.
But I guess final words, Hunter, because again, we did not do this to just drag Hawthorne through the mud.
No.
Don't some of the greatest geniuses in all of the arts sometimes slip up? Like, does David Lynch have an octagon?
Yeah, of course he does.
What is it?
Fuck, I can't say.
Oh shit. You can't say.
Yeah, not
Like,
off.
because Thomas Nowell will be upset with you?
Yeah,
Are you?
Thomas Nowell. Yeah, I would not say that, but like if for nothing else because of Thomas Nowell, I'll
Okay.
let him say it.
Fair
Yeah, I
enough.
can't piss off my dear friend and co-editor.
Let's think about one more genius in another area of the arts who made an octagon. Can we think about that? Whether it's a movie director, whether it's a painter. Is there anything out there? Like, did Dali, Salvador Dali, do an octagon? I'm pretty well versed in his works. I don't know that he ever did. Like, there was nothing that was just shockingly shitty. You know, it didn't. Some of his later stuff I might not respond to it well, but I'm trying to think. Giger, H.R. Giger, I think he was always pretty on point.
Dude, I feel
There,
very in the spot right now.
you are on the spot, but at the same time, it's a tough question because, well, let's go back into music. David Bowie. I think we can both agree, and most of our listeners will probably agree, whether they like him or not, genius. What about Never Let Me Down from the mid to late 80s? Like, it's a little rough.
That just said 80s. Yeah.
But 80s, I mean, Let's Dance is amazing, right? That's
Not
his.
altogether, I don't think.
You don't think all Let's Dance is all great?
No.
We disagree. Time to call Marty Rickenen.
Call Marty. Marty Rickenen, you're on notice.
I think Let's Dance is amazing, but let's look at, yes, 90125. We both like that album a lot. Big Generator sucks, mostly, for the most part. Again, it's not an octagon, right? It's not that bad.
Because it's like, because it's, there's sincerity there. You know what I mean?
Same thing with Invisible Touch by Genesis.
Like,
Yeah, there's
it's a
sincerity
band
there.
trying to do something. Octagon is not that.
Yeah. Well, we love you, Quorthon. We understand why Octagon has 11 reviews on Metal Archives at 30%. I think that's a little high. I'd probably put it at about, I don't know, between 5 and 10%, maybe. And you're zero, because I'm more sympathetic about this album.
I know.
Are you zero? Are you 0%?
I said 15. I'm
15.
so, yeah.
Oh, I didn't hear you. 15. Okay. Well, I'll go 20.
Cool. We'll be right back.
Next episode 125, is going to be on Anathema's Eternity, a much more sublime and moving and wonderful piece of music than this thing. I emailed you recently. I was having a late night listen to that and getting really emotional with it, saying I might cry when we cover this thing. Forgive me.
My memories to that record are tied directly to you.
Oh, really?
Dude, that was your first episode, or God, I always say episode, your first issue in Metal Maniacs.
Ah,
Dude,
right, because it came out late 96.
I took a fucking shit in a toilet in Maggie Valley, North Carolina, reading that review and going, God damn Jeff Wagner. Because I'd bought Symposium.
and you'd be like, man, I can't wait to talk about Octagon with that guy 30
Dude,
years
I cannot. I tell you what. Well, I tell you what. 30 years hence, I
hence.
ain't talking about Octagon with this boy.
Hilarious. Hilarious, man. Wow. That's some perspective for you. Too much fucking perspective.
Too much perspective.
To
Yeah.
quote Spinal Tap. All right, man. It's been fun. I look forward to Eternity kind of getting back on track. And Corthon, we love the absolute. We love you so much.
We love
Thank
you, Corthon.
you for your gifts.
May
If
you
you can
rest in peace.
hear us out there somewhere. Oh my God, yes. Until we perceive Bifrost, this is
Radical research.
good night.